Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. I hope everybody's having a beautiful evening. That was Odyssey Native New Yorker. And this evening we have a Native New Yorker as our guest. She's transplanted to Baltimore. I'm going to bring in my co-host. Good evening, Rhea, Danny, and Mr. B.
Hey.
Good evening.
How's everybody this evening?
All right, all right.
Okay.
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am fantastic. Are you guys ready for this evening's guest?
Yep.
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Hello, hello.
I'm going to do a little bio on our evening's guest. Tonight, our special guest, BB, is a native New Yorker who transplanted to Baltimore in 1990. She's a single parent who once dealt in a life of crime. She was a drug dealer, a smuggler, and was locked up abroad. Excuse me. While she was incarcerated, she wrote hundreds of poems. Upon her release from prison, she had a book published titled Poems from the Inside, Thoughts of a Prisoner. BB is working on her second book titled When You Lose Everything But You Still Have God. Without further ado, we here at Delicious Talk welcome our special guest, Arthur BB. Good evening, BB.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
We're just
good,
fantastic.
Good.
Okay, give us a little background about BB. Growing up, did you have any brothers and sisters? And you were from New York. What part of New York were you from?
I was born in Queens, raised in Brooklyn, but grew up in Manhattan.
Okay.
And I'm the last
sisters?
Of nine biological children. I'm a baby, but eight, mm-hmm. but nine others adopted, so a total of 18 kids altogether.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's great, though, you know. And your mom and dad adopted those children?
Both, no, my mom did. My mom adopted her. Yeah, her best friend was poisoned for a bottle that was meant for her. So she adopted her nine children.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, that was the first one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is your mom still living?
No, my mom and my dad both are deceased.
Okay.
But just
all right, so
it's a sad thing to say, but I was the only drug dealer in the family.
Okay. So when did your
I said it was nothing that was inherited or was followed up to my footsteps. It was my own doing.
Okay. When did you start in the drug business? When you were in New York or when you came to Baltimore?
No, when I came to Baltimore in 1990.
And what caused you to go into that business?
Well, I just finished high school. I was on my way to college, and I was driving a cab in Manhattan. And one of the customers that I was bringing down to Baltimore, although my mom was already here, he couldn't pay the fare because the people he was coming to meet had gotten in trouble, whatever. So all he could pay me was drugs, and that's what I took and ran with it.
Wow. So,
I was
okay.
What I was doing, but everything just came naturally.
Right. So did you and have people working for you, or, you know, you're a big drug dealer?
Yeah, well, actually, my first charge in 1991, they labeled me as a queenpin of Baltimore. So I became, from something that started out so small, turned up here so big, and, yeah, I had multiple work.
Wow. So when you went to jail in 1991, you said, right?
I didn't, but I didn't do any time. I ended up, was able to afford a good lawyer and pretty much beat the charge.
Okay. Now, when did the drug smuggling come in?
That came in 1998.
And what caused you to do that?
A friend of mine needed a favor, and I said, okay, no problem. And it just went from there. I didn't get caught until 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because of a friend turned me in.
Because of what?
A friend turned me in.
Oh, wow. Always had those rats out there. So when
I was in the country, and my connected flight was in Puerto Rico. So when I got to Puerto Rico, there were two federal agents from Baltimore waiting for me there.
Wow. And this friend that turned you in, were they looking at some time or, you know, were there some type of discrepancy between you and this friend?
She wanted to go on a trip with me, and she almost got me caught the last time I took her on a trip. I normally go by myself, and
mm-hmm.
I took her one time to get some money. And this one time she wanted to go, she had a drinking problem. She couldn't control it, and I couldn't afford it because this was my last trip. And I didn't need anything in the way of that, which turned out to be what happened anyway.
Wow. So you were locked up where abroad?
In Puerto Rico. It wasn't abroad. It was in Puerto Rico.
Oh, in Puerto Rico. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what
because
are the prisons?
Tell on the people.
You did what?
Say again? Because I
no,
wasn't telling the people they wanted me to tell on. They left me over there for 18 months. until I had to end up writing to judges in Puerto Rico and in Baltimore because I was pleading not guilty because I wouldn't find out a jury in my own peers in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. You know, Puerto Rico is a prejudiced state.
Right.
So I wouldn't have found a jury in my own peers there, so I kept pleading not guilty there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get a jury trial. They had to do a change of venue.
So how long did you do time in Puerto Rico? When did they deport you back and make you finish your time here, or how did that work out?
I did 18 months in Puerto Rico. Then as much as I was writing a judge, I stayed in the law library, so that helped me a lot. So as much as I was writing a judge, he wanted to know why I wasn't back over yet either, so they finally transported me back to Baltimore. But I went from Puerto Rico to Tallahassee to Miami to Georgia to Oklahoma, then to D.C.
Wow.
They have no federal hold themselves for women in Baltimore City, so the closest place is Washington.
Mm-hmm. Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Okay. Where did they hold you in Washington, D.C.? In the D.C. District Jail, or?
Well, you know, in D.C., everything there is federal anyway, so no matter even if it's petty theft, it's a federal mm-hmm. charge until they downgrade it to a state. Well, it's not a state, you know, D.C. is not a state, so.
Right.
Everything's federal. So it doesn't matter, but the federal ones that come from around the country, whatever, they are treated differently than the ones that are from D.C. or Virginia itself.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's, like, pretty much just a state crime.
Now, what was the prisons like in Puerto Rico? Were they, like they show on television, you know, really bad, food bad?
No, Puerto Rico, that's the holding cell, the federal holding center for all the ones that surround the country. So, like, we have Vietnam. I was the only African-American over there. So they have Vietnamese, Chinese, German, Jamaican, Haitian. They had somebody, but I was the only African-American that was there, that's female votes. So which means I had to write to the judge and to the warden for special books. So they had no English books there for me. And I love to read. And then when I wanted the Black Law Dictionary, I had to sit for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get along with those different cultures?
From being from New York, I spoke a little bit of Spanish anyway, so I was fine with them and Dominicans. But Dominicans and Puerto Ricans didn't really get along. But I was still neutral to everybody, and then the Chinese girl took to me. I mean, I was fine. My only time I got into a fight was with a Jamaican chick that grew up in New York over a book.
Mm.
And I ended up going in for 33 days for that.
Wow. So then when you came to D.C., how long were you locked up in D.C.?
I was in D.C., I want to say, for approximately 5 to 6 months before I even got my sentence.
Mm-hmm. And so where did you actually do your time after you got your sentence? Where exactly did you do your time?
In Alderson, West Virginia, the same place where Martha Stewart was.
Right. I was in Alderson, too,
some years
ago. Yeah, I know about Alderson, and I was in Alderson, and they held me there for a couple of weeks, and then they sent me to Morgantown, which was co-ed at that particular time. Yeah, so I know about Alderson. The girl who shot, I think it was President Ford, Squeaky Fromm, the one who's with
mm-hmm.
the Manson, she was there as well. But she wasn't there when I was there, but she spent time in Alderson as well. Yeah,
okay.
So you finished out your time in Alderson.
Yeah. Actually, when I got released, that's why the next book is called When You Lose Everything But You Still Have God, because I didn't have anything. By the time everything was over, all my money was depleted, all my furniture and cars and homes were gone. And when I got to Alderson, it's time to be released. They said that I need a physical address. I didn't have one. I had no place to go. So they was putting me in a halfway house until I found a place, which only could have been for like a week or more. I ended up writing the judges again, because I ended up spending 5 months there in a halfway house when I wasn't supposed to. So it's been a rough ride, but you live and you learn.
Well,
but I do it again. Who
had custody of your kids? How many children do you have?
Well, my two kids are grown, and the two boys I was trying to adopt, that was the reason why I was taking a trip, because I found one boy in Baltimore looking for food in the dumpster at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And then my brother was about to lose his 5-month-old child because the mother was abusive, so I was trying to adopt them too. And the judge that was in charge of their case said that I had to find a better you know, place because the house that I was buying down, they had a heater in the middle of the room floor. He was afraid that the baby would be in his walk and run, you know, walk by and touch the heater and burn himself. So he gave me 30 days to find a place. At this point, I only had like $5,000 left in my stash money, but I was working as a nursing assistant, which I was loving. So I said, let me make one more trip, get the money to get a house, and then the boys will be fine. And they're losing those two.
Wow. So when, okay, when you started writing your poetry, did you start that when you first got locked up or after you was in there for a while?
No, that happened like the fourth day after being there because it took a while for them to warm up to me so I couldn't get a comb. They made me take my braids out. So my hair was all over the place and I didn't have a comb. When I went to court, my hair was all over the place. They wouldn't give me a change of underwear for like about almost a week. I was washing up the same ones every day. They were being real cool at first. So I just started writing poetry. The next thing I knew, by the time I got to all of them, I had 700 and something poems.
Wow.
So I took half of that and turned it into a book.
Mm-hmm.
That shut me up because in Puerto Rico, I couldn't get visits because they kept saying, are you going to be transferred any day now? So they were denying all my requests to have people put on my visiting list. I was being denied left and right.
Well, your poems are basically things that happened to you while you were in jail or throughout your life as being a drug dealer. Just, you know, what are your poems based off of?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both.
Okay. Is this your first time ever writing?
I always wrote, but just kept it like in a journal. I just never thought about publishing anything. I always wanted to be a writer. But I didn't think about anything and just making a book out of it until I started seeing how many poems I had collected. I started out writing the second book, and I was doing the chapters. Each chapter has a poem in the beginning of each chapter.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So when you got home and got settled, what was the first thing you did?
I was in a halfway house. There wasn't much that I could do. When I finally got to my first apartment, it was actually a snowstorm here, and I was stuck in the house for 4 days straight, couldn't go up, but I didn't care. I loved every minute of my first apartment. I didn't have to share with anybody. I didn't have to worry about feet up, when to get up, when to move, when it was count time, none of that.
Right. Yeah, because it can get pretty crazy. You know, you have to do what you're told, when you're told. You know, it's just like they take control of your life once you're locked up. Now, when you did get on this side, did you get visitors?
Yeah, I did. My brother, one of my favorite brothers, he was coming to see me, and some of my homegirls came. I had a few people that came through.
Okay.
People were staying away because they weren't sure about, you know, what to do and whatever, yada, yada, but I did get visits. And I refused a lot of visits, too, as well.
Why is that?
This wasn't ready for people because I just sat there and just thinking all that she went through and you don't have nothing to show for it, nothing.
Wow. So what did you accomplish over the time of you selling and smuggling drugs?
Right now, I can look back and say nothing because I lost the boys. That was one of the biggest things that I was really worried about. So I lost them, so I really didn't accomplish anything except knowledge and understanding and seeing what I did wrong.
Okay. So when you, you may have misunderstood what I was asking. When you were dealing the drugs, you know, what did you buy houses, cars, jewelry?
I went on trips and was able to give my kids anything they wanted. You know, although it's kind of selfish, but yeah, I definitely accomplished a lot with that. I gained a lot, although it was materialistic. And how can you be happy about something like that when you was hurting people in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, does anybody have any questions for BB?
I do. The boys, was there anyone else in your family that was able to get them, or you all lost them all together?
We lost them all together.
Okay.
The social worker that was in charge of his case, she secretly went behind our back and adopted him and moved to another state.
Wow.
Wow.
That's what happens, you know, when people see that you're down and out, all they do is, you know, try to put their foot in your necks and keep you down, you know, do all kind of crazy things, because I was kind of low. You said the social worker did that.
yeah. And the other little boy, the one I found, I had already got him to a place where he was feeling good because he was like ADHD, ADHD, and his mother was having a hard time keeping a control on him. Well, after that happened to me, he ended up trying to molest his six-month-old sister. He tried to set the house on quiet. I'm on fire 3 times. He really turned out bad, and I kept him like twice when I came home, but he was already lost to me at that point. He told me that I left him and that I didn't love him.
Oh, wow.
He wasn't enough to do with me, yeah.
I have a question. What were you selling? Like, you know what I'm saying? What were you selling?
Cocaine.
Cocaine?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I, me myself personally, I have, I've never been a trafficker. That just seems like they give it a million years for trafficking, but I have sold drugs before. I've been in that industry, and you know, people fail to realize it's not because you want to. It's because, you know what I'm saying, when you're pushing to the limit and your back is against the wall, sometimes you have no other options. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's what it looks like you know what I'm saying. And let me ask you, you know what I'm saying, I know you've changed, but me, from my standpoint, like I have a health issue right now, and you know what I'm saying, I have to do some fundraising, but you know what I'm saying, I'm trying not to, you know, they say when you need something, you always stick to what you know, you go back to what you know, and you know what I'm saying, that's something I don't want to go back to what I know. But let me ask you this question, do you ever, like, when you get down to your last, does it cross your mind, or do you ever get that itch to go back and hit the block, or you know what I'm saying, or make a phone call, because I know I do myself when I'm hurting, you know what I'm saying, I get that itch, like, hey, damn, I'm broke, I'm waiting on these people to give me a check, and you know what I'm saying, I could have made like 3-4 times that, you know what I'm saying, in a week.
I've had offers, listen, from the day I came around, before the office, like, yo, you want this, you want that, you know, because what I went through, like, again, I said, I lost everything, and then I lost respect a lot of my family, because they didn't know what I was doing. Some, a lot of them didn't know what I was doing. I lost a lot of their respect, and I sleep good at night now, and if I do get broke, I can make a phone call now and say, yo, I need a couple of dollars, which, thank God, that hasn't happened yet, but I'm content with me right now, and yes, it has crossed my mind one time, not gonna lie, there was New York last month. And it did cross my mind because somebody said, yeah, no, that's all right. No, that wasn't worth it. I had too many warning signs saying no. I listen to my first mind now.
Right, right. I do as well. But, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes,
it's getting hard out here now. Just stay strong. You can
do it.
It is.
And now, and you know what I'm saying? Loyalty is not the same now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Back then when you have friends, you really have friends. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It was loyal. But nowadays
right.
everybody's a crab. You know what I'm saying? Nobody wants to do nothing for nothing. You know what I'm saying? Anybody will rat you out at any given moment if they see a chance where they can get ahead. You know what I'm saying?
And people are not gonna pay for it no more. So-and-so is down the street doing something. You're welcome. Have a nice day. And there's enough money out there for everybody. Cut it out. The bullets and stuff, that there stuff needs to stop. There's enough out there for everybody. If that's what you choose to do.
Right.
Yeah, but I think it mounts down to greed.
This is Danny. Hi, everybody. How are everybody?
Hi, Danny.
Hi.
Hey, Danny.
My question is, do you, you know, I applaud you for coming home and doing something positive and writing now and, you know, doing all of that, and I definitely congratulate and applaud on that. But any moment, do you have any regrets? Do you have any regrets where you, like, tag, like, I wish I could have, I wish I wouldn't, or do you just take it as, you know, it was a lesson, you learned from it, it was experience, and you just continue to go on and use it, you know, change the negative into a positive like you've been doing. Do you have any regrets, or
yes,
would
I
you
do
it again? Like I said, if you had the opportunity, would you think twice again, like all that you've been through? Do you think that it was worth it, or you would still have done it if you was approached with that opportunity again, knowing what you went through?
No, it wasn't worth it because, like I said, I finished high school, did a little bit of college, so I'm definitely smart. What really got me was being, like I said, in Puerto Rico, if you, they try to put you with your own kind. I was the only African-American over there, so I had my own cell pretty much at all times. One day they had to put a Cuban chick in the cell with me, and she was withdrawn, but she was prejudiced. But she didn't want me to help her, but she's pooping all over the place and vomiting. I got to clean her up because I don't want to smell it and step in it. She really needed me to touch her. But I said, well, dang, is she doing this? And I never really saw it like that. I said, this is just one person. Imagine how many people I've been hurting all this time. Because I did coke and heroin at some time. And she was coming down, and she was withdrawing from heroin. And she was sick and throwing up and going on herself. And we was in that room, but we was on lockdown for 3 days. We had to take care of this. I was like, wow, you've been doing this to thousands of people for the last 10, 12 years. Is this what you like? So that's what really shocked me. That's what really hit home for me.
Right. Were you a user or you just sold drugs?
No.
You just sold drugs?
Yes.
Okay. That's good because not a lot of people, you know, they always say a lot of people dibble and dabble. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I was just asking.
Right. They become their best clients.
And I didn't like the feeling they gave me. I don't like not being in control of myself. So I don't like the feeling that they gave me. So that was
I was gonna say that's not true either. A lot of people they don't dibble and dabble in their stuff. That's just something they movie stuff do. A lot of people really don't. You have some that try it, but most times, you know what I'm saying, when you in that game, you in that field, you don't even I didn't even smoke weed when I was hustling. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm the type of person, I don't like anything I can't control.
Right, exactly.
I try to put myself, even if I go to the club scene now, I go to older clubs because, you know what I'm saying, the young kids, you can't control the outcome. And if I can't control the outcome of something, you know what I'm saying, that I feel I don't need to be there because anything can happen. And you know what I'm saying, I'm not going to put myself at risk, even because I've been there before. I've played them cards, you know what I'm saying? I've been locked up, you know what I'm saying? I don't like sitting in a cell 23 hours a day. I don't like every day feels like a month, you know what I'm saying, when you're in there. That's just not something that I want to live with. I don't like watching over my back, you know what I'm saying? I don't like carrying straps, you know what I'm saying, all the time and have to protect myself or worry about who's looking for me or who's coming. You know, that lifestyle, you know what I'm saying, it gets old. And when you alleviate that from your life, it's like a total different life. Now, I'm not going to front. It's not worth it. I do miss the money at times, you know what I'm saying, because I had everything. Everything is paid, and I do miss the money. And it's funny because they say when you become a Christian, everything, you know what I'm saying, it's that much harder. You know what I'm saying? When I was out there, I had everything I wanted. But as soon as you change your life, it's like you go from everything to nothing. And you know what I'm saying? I guess that's God testing to see if you're going to be strong, you know what I'm saying? And you're going to keep the faith and stay and do as he actually asks of you to do. But it's a process, you know what I'm saying? It's a process.
Yes, it is, because, you'd be tested so much. And let me ask you this. The friends that you had that, you know, were working for you and so forth, when you went to jail, were they still, you know, keeping in contact with you when you got on this side, or did they just forget about you?
Just a few. Either they branched out on their own, they were doing their own thing, or they sick now using real hard this. So it's different scenarios, different, you know, a variety of different things, but I'm picking and choosing now, and I'm making the right choices.
Right.
The ones that are still out there, like, BB, I know we can lock this block down. No, BB not doing nothing. BB good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we have a couple of callers on the line I'm going to bring. Caller 719, you have a question or comment for our guest this evening?
Yeah, BB, I read your book, and I think you needed an awfully more a lot of niggas in the book, you know?
Thank you.
I'm Shrek,
thank you.
You know?
I put in there that if you wanted to send some poetry in, there's no problem to send it in. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, well, when I was reading it, I was raped by like 9 niggers.
Wow.
Where did you get the book from?
A nigger named Bovice.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you liked it.
It's actually the book, but I mean, like, you know, I read it in prison. But I mean, there's a website that your book is posted on, and people are telling people to, like, troll you guys tonight. So, like, do you want me to give you the website?
Give
you
me
can
one
maybe,
second.
Like, pop it.
Give me 1 second. Okay, go ahead.
Lemon, L-E-M-O-N.
Were you breaking up? Say it again.
Lemon, L-E-M-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
Party, P-A-R-T-Y, and it's all one word, lemonparty.org. And it's, like, wait, from 9get.com.
No, P-A-R, what, I'm sorry, P-A-R-A.
P-A-R-T-Y. So, all together, it's lemonparty.org.
Okay. Got it?
And they're coming from 9gag, and they have all your guys' info posted and shit. I'm just letting you guys know.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Not a problem. You guys have a good evening.
You
thank
too.
You.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For calling in. We have
yep.
another caller.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I was just reading on BTR, and I saw a show called Spending an Intimate Evening with a Nigger, and I just wanted to speak about chicken.
These are
what?
People that just have nothing better to do. we're going to
wow.
take a little break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to get you to read a few pieces from your book, okay?
Okay.
Hi, I'm Gail Delicious Johnson. I'm more than just a radio personality. I'm also a best-selling author of 5 published books, publisher, ghostwriter, poet, and a speaker. My latest book, a fast-paced, action-packed, drama-filled novel titled Back to Zero, is available. You can order your autographed copies of Back to Zero and any of my books from my website at www.deliciousbooks.webs.com/apps/webstore/. If you're looking to have your dreams come true in a book, look no further. I am the founder and owner of my own independent publishing company, JJ Publishing. JJ Publishing offers service to fit the new or seasoned author's budget. There are no hidden fees. I display a professional business attitude towards my client while treating them with dignity and respect. My mission is to make the first-time author as well as the seasoned author's use of JJ Publishing services a most beneficial and memorable experience. Back to Zero is selling out fast. Don't be left out. Go to my website. Again, that address is www.deliciousbooks.webs.com/APPS/WEBSTORE/. After you make your purchase, check out my website. I thank you all in advance.
Okay, welcome back. That was Booker T and the MG's Green Onion. This evening our guest is BB. She's from Baltimore, native New Yorker, and she's been in a life of crime, but she's turned that all around. She's now a published author. So we're going to get right back with BB. All right, BB, so do you have your book ready so you can read some of your poems to us?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
This wisdom won't stop. Something has gone wrong along my life's path. My heart is lonely. My soul no longer laughs. I knew there would be bumps in the road, but the puddles I didn't see. This was not where I was headed. This is not where I was supposed to be. My mother should have had happy tears. I ignored her whine about the boy. It's too late to mend her broken heart. I miss the days of baby dolls and toys. I passed the point of no return. There's no erasing the pain. The good times have come and gone. I play my hard time doesn't last. Where were the flowers gone? They no longer seem to bloom. I feel so lost and lonely, even in a crowded room. On my ride through life, I had dreams of making it to the top. I got on the right train, but got off on the wrong stop.
Wow. That's nice. That's real nice.
Yeah.
You have another one you like to? What's your favorite? Do you have any favorites?
My favorite one, I can't seem, I meant to pull it out early, but I was running around being a little busy today, and I got home just in time to call you. But that is one of my favorites, the wrong stop, because I did get up in the wrong stop.
Okay. Well, we have another caller. Let's bring this caller to see if they have a question or comment. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, what's up?
Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I can kind of relate to the story of the book, and it's really making me want to go and buy it. You know, just about the whole having to grow up being a drug dealer and everything.
Mm-hmm. I think that was a crank call. But so you said you couldn't find your favorite.
No.
Can I say something? This is not my thing. All you prank callers, you know, with your nigger jokes and all other stuff, it's really not affecting us. You know what I'm saying? We're not getting upset about it. So you waste your time. But if you want to play around, my name is Django. and I hope you guys seen the movie Django to understand why I said that. My name is Django. You can find me on Bringing Sexy Back. I'm on right now. So any more questions or comments? Let's keep it professional. I appreciate that. Go ahead, Miss Delicious, and with our guest and finish the talk.
Thank you, Dawn. I do appreciate that because there are some cranksters, and I can't understand why they can't find something better to do besides coming into my radio show. And they've been, you know, I've been on other shows where, you know, people have come and, you know, made the nigger jokes and this and that, you know. But like you said, it doesn't really bother me, you know, because it's just the prejudice is so prevalent now. And they're coming out so, you know, they're not even holding anything back. So it really doesn't even bother me. So thanks for that, darling. And back to Miss BB. Now, when you wrote your first poem, do you remember what it was about and what inspired you to write that one?
That's what I'm looking at right now, Metal Scars. It's because everything is metal. The metal chains, the metal shackles, the metal bed, the metal sink, the metal toilet. Everything was metal. Like, wow, really?
Oh, okay. Would you like to read that one?
Yeah. I sleep on a metal bed, hang my clothes in a metal closet. I wash my face and drink my water from the same metal faucet. I'm locked behind metal doors. I eat my food on metal trays. There's also a metal door on the chapel where I go and pray. I speak to a counselor as he sits behind a metal desk. I step out of a metal room as he denies my request. The metal whistle blows. It's time to be locked behind the metal door. Time to sit on a metal bed to be counted once more. One day I won't hear the metal key or be held by metal chain. One day I won't be a number. They'll be calling me by my name. I'm going home soon. No more iron bars. No more bad dreams. But I can't hide the metal scars.
Wow, that's heavy. That is heavy. I'd be an applause for that.
Yeah!
that
good.
Poem reminds
go on, Rhea.
That poem reminds me of a conversation I had with somebody who did like 12 and a half years. Everything that he endured, everything that happened, the thing that got to him the most was the locking of that gate. When that metal clank against that metal, it did something to his soul. It was robbing him of something every time it clicked. And for the longest of time, he lived out in like the country area near Michigan. Mm-hmm. And he went out there purposely because there was no locks in his house. And I said that, I'm like, he said, I couldn't live in the city because I couldn't not be locked. He said, but I couldn't have those. I couldn't have those locks. And that did. He said, every time that clink happened, it just reverberated through his entire being.
They don't close the door. They slam the door. They don't close the gate. They slam the gate. When they make sure they took down on you hard. Especially when times you get on a plane. And then the women have a habit so much worse than the men do. Like when we have to go to the bathroom, we have to pull our stuff down. They made me leave my shackles and everything on and maneuver to get my stuff down to go to the bathroom.
Yep, that's how they do.
I know it's crazy because because you know what I'm saying, it's something about hearing the door slam. And I think they do that on purpose. Purposely to let you know, like you mine now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's fucked up in a sense, because you know, they ain't got to treat you like that. I mean, you may have not everybody's an animal. You know what I'm saying? And that's how they treat you. That's when I was locked up. I had a Russian CO, and he was like, if you in here, you're a criminal. I don't care what you did. Like everybody's a criminal to me. You know what I'm saying? Everybody in here is a criminal to me. I don't care if you're here for a driving ticket or anything. Like everybody's a criminal. You know what I'm saying? And the stronger your case, like whatever you've done, your charges, like the worse they treated you. And that's crazy. Like
right. But you're no longer a name. Now you're just a number now. So that's all they see is
exactly,
your number.
Exactly. Exactly. You're just a number. Your social security number. That's it.
When they lock you up, they mentally, they take your dignity. They strip you of everything that whatever you. They strip you of your dignity and everything else to make you feel that crime that you did, to make you feel low, to take your self-esteem. They do all that as a part of the punishment. And sometimes even when you're locked up, they will lock you down. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
They put you in solitary confinement, and that will send a person crazy. I was locked in for 2 weeks in solitary confinement. And I'm telling you, when I think about it, it's funny now, but when I was going through it, I actually thought that I was going to lose my mind. And just imagine people have been locked down for years and years and years in solitary confinement. You know, so I know what it's like to, you know, go through those changes of being in the system's hands when they take everything from you. You know, you're everything, just everything. So, you know, what are you doing? Huh?
They can only take what you give them. They can try to strip you of everything, but it's what you allow to let go. You can give away piece by piece or get better with it and hold on to what you can hold on to less.
Right, but when you're in solitary confinement, it's so hard, very hard to hold on to your sanity because I'll speak for myself. I was in population, you know, you're being in population, you know, used to talking to people, you know, doing whatever you can do while you're in there. Then all of a sudden that's taken from you. You know, and 2 weeks seem like 2 years, you know, because you know the time goes by so slow. And you know, I prayed a lot, talked to myself a lot, sang a lot. You know, I didn't have books or nothing did I have. And in the daytime, it would just be like a slab of concrete and a toilet. in this in solitary confinement. And at night they would give you like it wasn't even a piece of, supposed to have been a little mattress and a blanket, but during the day you couldn't even lay down and take a nap, not unless you laid on that concrete with no cover. And then roaches crawling all over the place, you know, but I just was, you know, grateful and thankful and blessed that I got out of there and never went back to solitary confinement, but it's not fun at all, you know. So you can hold on to, you know, whatever dignity and whatever you got, you know, if you're a strong person, and, you know, that's the only time that I felt that I wasn't going to make it. But thankfully, you know, God pulled me through, and he took me from that to this, you know. So I look back on my past, and there's a lot of things that I did that, you know, I may have regretted, but I'm just thankful and grateful that, you know, he brought me this far, you know, because my life was just so messed up, you know, selling drugs and, you know, sometimes being my best customer, getting robbed, and, you know, just, it was just a torturous life, you know, but it's behind me, and I thank God that it is. So right. What are you doing these days? What are you doing these days?
I'm getting ready to start a program called 15 and Ready. It's for girls that's 15 and think they're ready for life. No, you're not, sweetie. I've been on both sides of the fence, and that's what one of the things I'm trying to do. And I'm making my own T-shirts now. I have a 9-to-5, and I do go to do inspirational speaking, motivational speaking in some places when they ask me to. Other than that, I just come home to read and write and get up for work and just stay home. Unless I go to one of my friends or whatever, they come and drag me out the house at the time, but other than that, I'm content with staying home.
Right, right. So this book that you're working on now, what made you write that one? When you
this
lose
one,
everything, but you still have God.
Because I did lose everything, and I didn't lose sight that I did have him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to just tell my story, because I went through so much. I went through a lot.
So what do you think of people who go through these adversities and then they blame God for it?
You can't blame him. He gives you your warning sign. It's up to you to take control. He always lets you know ahead of time. If I had warning signs that morning before I got on that flight, I had warning signs that morning before I got back on the flight to come home. Some kept telling me don't go home, wait a couple of days. And I just said, no, I got 2 boys I got to get home to. I got to meet the next morning. I got to get back home. So he does give you warning signs. He does try to help you as much as he can. But sometimes he has to look at somebody. He has to turn away from you for a second to help somebody else that's willing to listen.
Right.
You may be willing to listen, but somebody else may be. He may be having to go and save somebody else. Like, he has to turn away from you for a second, when that's for a second that he told you not to do something. That next second, you're gone.
Right. Right.
Because, now I agree with that as well. Because even in everyday life, I think we get warning signs about everything. We either don't recognize them or we ignore them.
Right.
But I'm a firm believer in that, because I know for a fact that I'm living today because of exact warning signs that I did recognize, or I just followed blindly. Don't know
right.
where they came from, but they saved my life.
Right. And we all have that third voice that tells us, you know, when to do something and when not to do something. And sometimes I listen to it. Most of the times I listen to it. And sometimes for instance, if I'm traveling somewhere and I say, well, I'm going to go this particular route, there's something will say, don't go that way, but I'll go that way anyway. And lo and behold, traffic backed up from here to New Jersey somewhere. And I say to myself, I should have listened to that other voice. So therefore, I'm listening and doing more from that other voice, because it's telling me these things for a reason. And I know, you know, that you know, everything happens for a reason. Everything.
Yeah.
Nothing is coincidental. Nothing, you know, everything has a reason and a purpose. So, you know, anybody who has that little third voice is there for a reason.
You could have ran into another car. Somebody could have ran into you. So this being stuck in traffic was a blessing for you.
Right, right. So you know what, from that, and especially going that same route, because it's a route that I travel when I'm generally going to my sister's house. And then some days when I'm going that way, I say, something will say, well, don't go that way. go up to Nebraska Avenue. I mean, sir, not Nebraska Avenue. Well, what is that? Well, he tells me to go a different route, and I go the other way, and no problems. And then I hear on the news where it was an accident, or, you know, I can see the street a little bit before I get up there, and I say, no, that's too much traffic, and just take the exit and go a different way. So, you know, if you, you know, that's what, you know, that little voice is there for, to help you out and to keep you on the straight and narrow, you know, whether you believe it or not or don't want to hear it. Because like I said, at times I would ignore it, you know, and do what I wanted to do. You know, then sometimes I would do what I wanted to do and it would, you know, work out okay. But, you know, that right. voice is there for a reason. You know, just like Rhea says, she listened to hers and, you know, I honestly believe that it's there for a reason and it works.
Now, don't get me wrong. I was hard-headed. I didn't always listen to it.
But, oh, I know. Nobody ever does, but I'm just saying when you did.
When that L fell, we had a big snow in Chicago, and the L fell off the track as it was turning the bend coming on this particular part. The L fell. I was on that L.
Whoa.
And something told me to get off. And I'm on the L9 getting off, because then I'm going to have to pay another car fare. And I'm going through this whole, and something said, get off now. And so I jumped off just as the door was closing. And I stood there for a while watching the L go, looking at the number, watching the L go. And then I'm like, okay, how am I going to get home? Because my transfer done ran out. So I figured out how to go over to the main street, and I knew they was going to let people on the back door because the buses were taking so long coming, and I was praying that I was one of them who was able to walk on the back door. That's what happened. It took me 4 hours and 57 minutes to get home.
Wow.
From what's normally like a 40-minute ride at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walked in the door, what was on the news?
That L had failed. Wow.
Like,
see, that was a good thing.
Okay. That was my introduction that I should have listened. But then, too, it told me the same thing about my ex-husband, and I didn't listen at all. I was really hard-headed.
Well, you know, like you said, everybody doesn't always listen. But, you know, just to know that you have that option, and when you do listen, and, you know, it's a good thing that you do when you do, you know, that's the good thing about it. You know, we can either listen or, you know, do whatever we want to do, but just be aware that it's there, you know, for a reason. Yeah, so do you have another poem you'd like to read? Because we're getting close to the end of the hour.
Okay. I have regulations to follow and rules to obey. When you give up your freedom, that's the price you have to pay. I can only ask certain questions. I have only a few rights. Someone else shows what time I get up in the morning and what time I go to bed at night. I must be careful how I speak. I must control my anger. The wrong word spoken is risk of danger. They have a jail within the jail, another prison behind the walls, and you must stand at attention whenever the uniform calls. I no longer say God. It sounds too much like the one in the sky. He is the one that watches over me. Only him my faith lies. He is my protector, my strength. With him I can stand tall. Even behind the prison, within the prison, behind the jail wall. I answer to Jesus, he is my God. Even when the uniform tests my strength, I try my best to make my sentence. They try to make my sentence hard. I find comfort in the Lord. I give him praise in everything I say and do. Glory and honor be to the Heavenly Father. God, I belong to you.
Wow. That is heavy. Now, when you said you wrote over 700 poems when you were locked up?
Yes.
Okay, did you put them all in the same book?
No, it's only 321 in the book.
Okay. Wow. Well, is there any way that people how can they get your book?
I have to change everything because the team that I was with before, they robbed me blind. Of course, you can't trust everybody. They shut down my website, but I found out for you today, they shut down the website. So I'm going to be reordering and restructuring everything. I'm going to call you back here with all the new information within a week.
Okay. All right, then I'll put that out on the next show then.
Are you considering publishing the other ones?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. But Gail,
the ones that you put in the first book,
uh-huh,
of your 700 and however many, the ones you put in the first book, did you do like the first 300 and whatever your number was, or did you pick and choose? And if so, how did you do that?
I picked and chose which ones that had a lot of meaning to me, and I thought that was such other people. Because in the beginning of the book, I'll give a dedication to the prisoners that I'm not speaking for you, I'm speaking for us. I'm not speaking like letting everybody know, well, this is what we all think, and this is what some of us think, and I don't stand behind them, I stand with them. No matter how free I am, I'm still a prisoner. I'm still a felon.
Wow.
So I had to pick and choose from that point, you know,
okay,
like which one you're going to pick. So that was the most, well, I can't even say it was tedious. It was actually fun for me. But the other one, I don't know what I'm going to do with the other poems. My next book, maybe, I may do another one after that one. But from this one here, this will be my first poetry book in a while. I'm going to get the other two novels out of my system that have to come out. But there's going to be poems in each of those books as well before every chapter.
Oh, okay.
Can I ask, can I ask you what part of New York you're from?
I was born in Queens, raised in Brooklyn, but grew up in Manhattan.
So you've been all over the boroughs, huh?
Yeah, except the Bronx, yes.
That's where I'm from. I'm from the Bronx.
I hung out in the Bronx right now. I was a fever believer now. Don't get it wrong. I was skate fever, disco fever. I was definitely part of that group.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. The second time you done said that. So what's the difference between being, wait a minute, raised and grew up? You were born one place, you was raised in another place, and you grew up another place. What's the difference between the second two?
I got most of my knowledge from Manhattan. I got a lot of my street smart and my school smart. I was more
That's what you were hustling. That's where the hustling is at.
Okay, I thought that's what you meant.
Wow.
No, it's a big difference. When I was in Brooklyn, I was a little girl then, so all I knew was playing hopscotch, double dutch, and going to school and going to church. In Manhattan is a totally different thing. I still did what I was supposed to do. Went to school, played hopscotch, but you learn faster in Manhattan than you do in Brooklyn.
Wow. Well, we've come to the end of this exciting interview with our most special guest, BB. We're going to have you come back on the show. So, you know, I really do appreciate your, you know, coming on the show tonight and listening to your story. And, you know, hopefully everybody took something away from it. And your poetry is beautiful. And, you know, when you get that information to me where you can get your books and, you know, the different things that are going on, you shoot that over to me. And, you know, I'll get that out there for you. Okay. Okay. Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience. Our subject matter is sexual, but not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. If you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, send me an email at gjdelicious37@gmail.com or to either of my co-hosts. That's Rhea at RheaAlexis@yahoo.com, RheaAlexis@yahoo.com, Danny@munchthemouth, that's munchdamouth@gmail.com, and last but not least, Mr. B at ankrummichael@gmail.com, that's ankrummichael@gmail.com. In the subject line, type topic or guest. We're here every Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. for an hour to an hour and a half. And if the topic is juicy, we're here for a full 2 hours of adult conversation. Tune in every first Friday at 11 p.m. for open topics and the last Friday at 10:30 for my musical show, Slow Jams or House Music, from the 50s and up. On Sunday at 7 p.m., y'all better stop by Gail's Blues Joint for some blues and sassy music. Remember, bringing sexy back does not mean you lost your sexy. Bringing sexy back is a state of mind and how you perceive yourself. Thank you, Rhea, Danny, Mr. B, my listening audience, and those who called in, and especially our guest this evening, BB. Everybody have a sexy evening. Good night. Smooches.
I would have read you one of them poems. Had I known, I would have read you a sexy poem.
Huh?
I would have read you one of my sexual poems. I know you got down like that. I would have read you one of them, too.
Oh!
Well, you can go on and read one really quick if you got it.
No, I already put the book away. No, I'm going to do two. But do you have my email address?
Let me see. No, I don't.
Okay.
What's your email address? You can call me back and give me your email address. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is
okay.
Sexy as well.
Okay,
everybody. Have a wonderful
evening.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
My Nana got the best radio show on the internet.